Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Institute for Liberty podcast. This is Andrew Langer, president of IFL. We've got an extra special treat this week. As you all know, one of the things that IFL has been fighting about, if you've been following our blogs or our podcasts, is the issue of the role that the regulatory state plays in the American economy overall. One of the things that I've railed about in the past, is the impact specifically on the manufacturing sector and how over the last 30 years, the manufacturing sector in America has effectively been eviscerated because of an ever-growing, always increasing federal regulatory state. It's one of the things that nobody talks about. The regulatory state currently costs the economy $1 trillion. And we're talking to Dr. Thorning today. She is the Senior Vice President and Chief Economist for the American Council for Capital Formation. She's got an extensive curriculum vitae, served in the Energy Information Administration of the U.S. Department of Energy. And she just completed. We're going to talk about two things. And Margo, first of all, actually, let me say welcome to you.
Thank you. Good to be with you.
Great. And we're going to talk about two reports. One that Margo worked on over the summer, which is something that ACCF has done on the impact of Waxman-Markey. It's that the title is the analysis of the Waxman-Markey bill, the American Clean Energy and Security Act of 2009, H.R. 2454. They did this in conjunction with the National Association of Manufacturers, an organization that's really taken some very good stands on regulatory issues. And we're also going to talk about a very interesting study that's come out of a group called Point Carbon here in D.C. On the impact of a cap-and-trade system, and the American entrance into the cap-and-trade system on the international carbon markets. So let me just throw it on out there. I mean, you know, why don't you tell us first of all a little bit about ACCF and what you guys do here.
The ACCF is a bipartisan nonprofit think tank devoted to encouraging saving, investment, capital formation, and we support the use of cost-benefit analysis for every new regulation, every new law. So one of the things our members have asked us to do in recent years is look at the impact on the U.S. economy of proposals to regulate greenhouse gas emissions.
Yeah, certainly, as we've all been talking about, it's, you know, these regulatory tools are incredibly helpful in getting us to not only determine which regs work and which regs don't work, and then combined with comparative risk assessment, which is an issue that we hammer on at Institute for Liberty quite a bit, you can actually prioritize what's really an issue in terms of public policy.
One of the things that I like people to think about when we talk about the costs and benefits of proposals to regulate GHGs here in the U.S., the World Bank lists the most prevalent causes of human mortality. According to their research, infant and maternal poverty kills more people every year than any other cause. Another key cause of mortality is women and children being exposed to the indoor pollution from cooking over dung fires, biomass fires. According to the International Energy Agency, 1.4 million women and children die prematurely every year because they have no electricity, they're cooking over biomass.
Prosperity makes people healthy.
That's right. The World Bank lists climate change at the bottom of the list in terms of what's causing loss of human life. So that helps me put this whole issue of climate change and how many of our scarce resources we should devote to it into perspective.
Well, let's talk about this specific report that you guys have done, because it's a fascinating report. It goes along with what a whole pastiche that has been put together over the last decade on environmental regulations and regulations in general. As we said, you know, $1 trillion regulatory state in the United States. What are we talking about in terms of costs between now and 2030, or between 2012 and 2030?
The Waxman-Markey bill would significantly impact U.S. gross domestic product and employment. According to our study, which we did in conjunction with SAIC, the same consulting firm that helps our U.S. Department of Energy maintain its national energy modeling system. So we worked with SAIC and used the national energy modeling system, and our study shows that by 2030, U.S. gross domestic product would be down by between 1.8%, if our optimistic case prevailed, to as much as a reduction of 2.4% if our less optimistic technology development scenario prevails.
It makes a heck of an argument, obviously. In light of what we're going through as an economy right now with the shrinkage of the sector, we really ought to be obviously looking to create jobs, right?
That's right. This bill would cost jobs. We did show new green jobs being added because of the renewable portfolio standards in the Waxman-Markey bill, which we modeled, and the energy efficiency standards, which we also modeled. But when you combine the cap and trade with the push for more expensive renewables, where you're substituting more expensive energy for cheaper energy, and the energy efficiency standards, which cost households and business money too, overall, even though new green jobs are created, we lose by 2030 between 1,790,000 jobs to as many as 2,440,000 jobs. And that includes a pickup of green jobs. But on balance, the economy loses jobs.
Yeah, as we're fond of saying at IFL, energy is the lifeblood of the American economy. I mean, you know, and small businesses, we focus on small businesses at IFL. And one of the key issues for us is this idea that small businesses get the worst of all possible worlds. Unlike individuals, they can't readily change their behavior. They can't turn off light switches, wear sweaters, etc. Unlike big businesses, they can't, for instance, negotiate for cheaper electricity rates or what have you with big carriers. So, you know, for us, it's small business, small manufacturers, especially when you get an order to fill on a good, you have to run your machinery to fill that order. And there's a certain degree of efficiency, but, you know, you're not going to pick up those energy efficiencies over the, you know, if the life cycle of equipment is, what, 15, 20 years, you know, you're looking at the outer edge of this entire bill before you can sort of make those investments.
That's correct. And small business would be impacted because the small businesses are going to be hit because of the relatively low ceilings for CO2 emissions on an annual basis that would be required under Waxman-Markey. Yep. Even small bakeries, small manufacturing companies will certainly bear these prices.
I know you're not a lawyer. Let's touch on that, because that's something that we've touched on in the past, and I'm not sure a lot of our listeners really get that. But it is this issue that the Clean Air Act, when it was passed back in the early 70s, when it was amended in the early 90s, it was focused on large facilities, large emitters, large manufacturers. As we've already said, America's large manufacturing sector is gone, you know, over the course of the 30 years of the Clean Air Act. I'm not saying it's all due to the Clean Air Act, because there are other regs that have had their roles in it. But can you talk at all about that issue of focusing this reg that was built for large facilities and how it drills down to small facilities? Do you have any sort of thoughts on that?
Well, the U.S. Chamber has done a pretty good piece, which is on their website, that talks about the number of facilities that would be covered if we were to regulate greenhouse gases under the Clean Air Act. But the Waxman-Markey bill picks up some of those same ceilings, and facilities that emit as few as 10,000 tons a year could be impacted.
And 10,000 tons, for those of you who aren't, you know, is a very, very small amount of carbon that's put out. I mean, we're talking about, you know, your average, as you said, a good medium-sized bakery, a pizza joint that has a couple of gas-fired ovens that are going. This really drills down to small businesses in a way that the orbit of the Clean Air Act was never intended. Let's talk about this point, carbon, because as an economist, obviously, you know, you get that the issue of how what happens here in the United States doesn't just impact our economy. Obviously, it has an impact abroad, that all of the economies are intertwined, unless you're, North Korea. But everything's intertwined, and what happens here has a cyclical effect elsewhere. So can you talk about the Point Carbon Report at all?
Yeah, the Point Carbon Report is an analysis of how the price of an emission allowance to emit a ton of CO2 in the European Union, which of course has put in place an emission trading system as of 2005, the study looks at the impact on the prices European companies would have to pay for an emission allowance if the U.S. were to impose its own emission trading system under, say, the Waxman-Markey bill, and link that to the European system. And the bottom line of the study is that it will benefit the Europeans very greatly if we adopt an emission trading system, because it will lower the price that a European company has to pay for an allowance by about half.
Wow.
by 2016. So the implication is, if we impose a cap and trade system here in the U.S., we will be raising our energy prices. We will be imposing a price on carbon, and Europeans can come over here and buy credits more cheaply than they can buy them abroad. So we'll be benefiting European business and consumers over there if we impose limits here.
It's leveling the playing field in a particularly bad way. The Europeans have already destroyed their manufacturing sector and destroyed a lot of the sectors of the EU's economy. And so essentially we are sort of handing them the tools with which to destroy our own economy.
Well, it will certainly hurt. And our study documents, our study was very conservatively done because we had a high cost and a low cost case. The low cost case assumed very generous new nuclear build, 25 new plants in the next 18 years. 60 units of carbon capture and storage, which makes it cheaper for utilities to produce electricity and so forth. But the obvious implication is that this bill will be harmful to the U.S. economy, and as the Obama administration itself admits, it won't help the environment. They released a chart in their President's Economic Report of the President that shows that by the end of this century, the global greenhouse gas concentrations will be about 700 parts per million. And that's because China and India and developing countries are spewing CO2 much faster than we are into the atmosphere. And if we pass a bill like Waxman-Markey, it will make about a 3% difference by the end of the century, virtually no environmental benefit. So as a policy tool, economists like to look at the cost of a proposal and the benefits. It's very clear this bill, Waxman-Markey, will slow GDP growth, slow employment, and according to the Obama administration's own documents, it will not help the environment.
So essentially, it's a piece of feel-good legislation that's hugely expensive. It's like a big thing of cotton candy. You're paying a vast amount of money, you're getting very little benefit out of it, except for maybe a brief sugar rush that's out there.
Well, it will
not to call it cotton candy, but
yeah, without international participation from developing countries like China and India, without them materially slowing their own emission growth and ratcheting it down, what we do in the developed world almost doesn't matter because our emissions are virtually flat between now and the end of this century. So our focus needs to be on developing the technologies that will enable us to burn the coal that we have here in the U.S. while capturing and hopefully storing the CO2, as well as more nuclear, as well as other alternative fuels that are currently under development.
Sure. I mean, this is the whole idea behind, let's assume for a moment that 100 years ago we had decided that the big problem facing America was the amount of horse manure in New York City. And we created a huge regulatory state to deal with that. The chances of us actually developing the automobile or some sort of technology that would actually get rid of the horse manure wouldn't have happened. I mean, essentially, anytime you increase the regulatory burden, it's going to depress entrepreneurship and innovation.
Well, that's right. A better way forward, if we were to adopt mandatory system here in the U.S. would be to impose a small tax on carbon emissions and let it ratchet up slowly, because that would give companies, households time to make the changes that would be needed to reduce emissions.
And let me say that is an if. That's of course assuming that we all would agree that CO2 emissions are in fact not just a problem. I mean, it can be a problem. It can be, you can demonstrate a link, but you could. I'm not saying that there is, but if one were to demonstrate a link between carbon emissions and climate change, anthropogenic climate change, it would also then depend on whether or not it's a prioritized problem in terms of public policy parlance.
That's correct.
Yeah. Well, listen, I want to thank you all. I mean, do you have any closing thoughts on this?
I think we ought to take a hard look at how many of society's scarce resources we want to put into climate change and whether we want to focus even more effort than we already do on reducing global economic poverty and energy poverty.
Yeah, I agree with that wholeheartedly. That's exactly as we began by saying, prosperity leads to better health, it leads to a better environment overall, poverty leads to a worse environment, worse public health. Well, Dr. Thorney, do you want to, what's the website for ACCF?
www.accf.org. Our full study is at the website. We also have an analysis on each of the 50 states, a two-page report on each of the 50 states, how the Waxman-Markey bill would impact the state's economy.
Well, thank you very much for joining us. And we're going to be continuing to hammer on both this study, in a good way, and to talk about the Point Carbon study, which is just extraordinary, the idea that we would sell out our future to benefit the European future. This is Andrew Langer, President of the Institute for Liberty. Thank you all very much. You can obviously find us on the web, www.instituteforliberty.org. Thanks a lot.